Hello and welcome to Risky Business, your weekly security briefing sponsored by Verizon Business Security Solutions, powered by CyberTrust. I'm Patrick Gray. If this is your first time tuning into this podcast, don't forget to subscribe using the links to the left of the posts on our main website or on the Slash Security subsite. You can subscribe via iTunes or whatever other podcatcher you prefer. Well, it's been a busy week for security news. We've got worms, vulnerabilities galore, chaos, mayhem, destruction and disaster. It's fantastic. Well, maybe it's not that bad, but it's hardly been a quiet week. On today's show, we'll be checking in with the team at OSCERT. They've identified a particularly interesting internet worm that has the AV vendors in a spin. We'll hear from Paul Craig from securityassessment.com in New Zealand. He found those rather nasty .NET vulnerabilities that were patched last week, one of them anyway. That's coming up later. But first, as always, we're joined by Munir Katadia from ZDNet Australia to discuss this week's headlines. And I believe a celebration is in order, Munir.
Oh, yeah, a little bit.
So the news
has got round, has it?
The news is all over the wires. Would you enlighten our readers?
Listeners, I'm afraid. I got promoted last week, so now I'm editor of ZDNet Australia.
There you go. Now, you know, Munir is now actually the man over at ZDNet Australia. So we hope that he can continue appearing on this podcast. But you never know because.
Oh, I may be too important for it now, right?
Well, that's right. You know, he's a happening man. Munir, lots of news this week. I suppose the first item, the most recent item, is that a dangerous Java flaw, and I've got to say, I love you guys for using this headline, dangerous Java flaw threatens virtually everything.
Well, dude.
Who would ever suggest ZDNet sensationalizes anything?
Oh, dear. Look, we speak to these people, we speak to these experts, including OSCERT and Pure Hacking, and this is what comes out. These guys are telling us that it's very, very serious. It's all over the place. It's difficult to patch. People aren't going to patch it. Lots of stuff is vulnerable right now.
Well, I suppose the most interesting aspect to it is, yeah, a lot of people won't actually patch it, will they? I mean, they wouldn't necessarily know to.
We had a guy from Pure Hacking saying that it's very unlikely people are going to patch these very quickly. And there's some things people patch on a regular basis, like your Windows products and, you know, those kind of things. But there are some things like routers, which people never get around to patching. So it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, it sure will. But we'll see if anyone actually winds up doing something nasty with it, because it could leave a few people exposed. Now, I suppose in other news, Microsoft is throwing another US $50 million at its enterprise security products.
That's right. This is its fourth front product. One of the things that's come up, though, it seems that Microsoft, it's a security product for large companies, and it's throwing all this money at it, but if you really look into it, they're actually throwing money more at training and marketing and other areas, not actually making the product brilliant.
Yeah, I suppose it's more of a commercial product. It isn't so much about making the core components of Windows secure, which they have spent an absolute truckload of money on. This is more of a security product type of proposition, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. So they're going to be like more marketing, and we all know that they're brilliant at that. So
$50 million
probably, like, you know, loose change, really.
Yeah, well, there we go. Okay, and we've had some interesting comments around this DKIM anti-spam initiative, which is where you've got domain keys and signed domains, which is, you know, supposedly going to help really stamp out a lot of spam. But one of the engineers who helped to develop it says it is not foolproof.
Well, yeah, I mean, the thing that they're saying is that you're going to have these untrusted, like, domains and whatever, and these trusted signatures. But one of the things that this guy has said is that cyber criminals will authenticate their messages as well. And Cisco has already come out and said there's strong circumstantial evidence that cyber criminals are already registering throwaway domains and using it for that. So it may slow them down because they'll have less domains to use to send out all of this spam. But in actual effect, will it have that much difference? I don't think so. And nor do these guys.
Yeah, well, it depends on how much people have to actually pay to have their domain keyed as well. I think that's going to be interesting. You know, getting their criminals, supposedly, were not supposed to be able to get their mitts on, SSL certs from, you know, really good providers.
Mm-hmm.
But a few of them were quite lax in doing, they were supposed to do Dun & Bradstreet checks on companies trying to get SSL keys for web servers, but they never did. So you know, some of them, I mean, there are good ones like VeriSign and whatnot, but some of the smaller guys didn't. It's a huge step in the right direction. And also some of the guys around this DKIM anti-spam standard are saying that, you know, once domains are keyed, they can sort of be ranked to find out if they are, in fact, throwaway domains. So there'll be a bit of a reputation model involved. Yeah. And
well, it's definitely a step in the right direction.
Well, it means that people can't send mail from non-existent domains. So that's really what this is all about. And, yeah, who knows? Who knows how effective it's going to be? But we can only hope, because I'm so sick of going through this shit. I don't know about you.
Totally.
It's like, I don't want any gay midget porn. I don't want Viagra. I mean, some of the stuff, you know, you get... I mean, particularly in now that I'm running this, you know, itradio.com.au website, I have to go through all the comments, man, and that's something else altogether. So
that is a complete nightmare. Yeah, we have the same issues here. It's you have to just come in every day and then trawl through and get rid of all the adverts selling Nokia phones for $10 and all of that kind of stuff. Yeah,
but it seems that they actually save the most deviant, perverted, sick porn spam for comment spam, because the stuff that I've been having to trawl through is really quite, you know, it makes your hair go curly.
I think they're targeting you, mate.
Yeah, baby. Okay. Now, I suppose in a bit of a bug roundup, we've had a Adobe Flash flaw, which is, you know, bad Swift files that you load up in a browser could be a drama. We've also had an interesting one here. It's like a perfect storm vulnerability. When you've got IE and Firefox installed together, you actually wind up introducing a vulnerability.
And seeing as you can't really get rid of IE and all of these people who have downloaded Firefox, I mean, it makes them vulnerable, which is kind of a strange move. Maybe it's another marketing spin from Microsoft.
Well, we don't know who to blame. It's very confusing.
It is, but this just means that I wonder what would happen if now, can we like try and pressure Microsoft to say, look, we have to have the ability to completely remove IE.
Yeah, interesting. And I suppose also, I mean, look, I'm just a bit confused because we're in the media and we can't actually point the finger at anyone on this one, and it's a bit confusing. But, you know, some people are saying that it's, you know, more of an IE problem. Other people are saying it's more of a Firefox problem. So, yeah, interesting.
I wonder what happens if you try and delete both of them and load Opera instead.
Oh, my God. I think the world would collapse into a black hole. Now, I love this story that you wrote. Interesting. Am I right in assuming that this story was inspired by one of our news segments in this podcast?
Oh, it was indeed. Yeah, we were talking about all of the... you're talking about the Apple patches story, right?
That's right.
Yeah, we were talking about how many patches there have been for Apple, and I was just counting, and it came up with 100. It's like, oh my God, 100 patches. That's quite impressive so far, only 6 months into the year.
And how many patches are there in Windows for the same period?
Yeah, I should have found that out, really. But
good old thorough journalism.
There haven't been that many, have there? I think there's been like a handful at the most.
No, but what I found particularly interesting about this is it wound up all over Dig, right? Now, this is Muneer's story, which has said Mac OS X has 100 bugs, but it is still safer than Windows because there isn't really the malware out there at the moment. I wrote a similar story about, when was that, about a year and a half ago, and the amount of hate mail... death threats, you know, that I got from writing that from all the fanboys was absolutely astronomical. People were still saying, even a year and a half ago, that Mac OS X was inherently more secure and had, you know, absolutely, it was unhackable, it was a Fort Knox, it was the safest OS you could use. And now it's interesting reading through the comments on Dig to your story. It seems that people seem to accept that OS X isn't, in fact, a particularly secure operating system.
It's funny, there has been a massive turnaround, hasn't there, over the past year and a half. I've got to say, yeah, I didn't get any death threats for that story either. It was interesting. If you just pointed out that there was an issue, oh, Apple patched something, then you'd get a few. But
yeah, well, you're biased. Oh, you're obviously biased against Apple. How dare you report this?
Exactly. It's like, hang on, I haven't used Windows in a very long time. So,
yeah.
It's so not the case. But no, I think it's important to point these things out. And I think while there's a lack of malware, whether it be because the Apple still only has a small market share, which is boring everyone to tears when you come out with that one, or if it's just because there's no malware out there and people aren't attacking it, whatever the case may be, I still think it just seems that it's a lot safer to be using the Mac.
Yeah, it appears that way until someone actually gets around to writing a Trojan for it, because most Mac users don't actually use antivirus software.
I'm looking at my iFlight camera right now and wondering if anybody's looking back at me.
A regular source of information for both you and I, Muneer Adam Poynton of assurance.com.au in Melbourne, said that when he bought his Power Book or whatever they're called, the first thing he did was put a bit of sticky tape over the over the eyesight camera, which I
we talked about this before. I said I wasn't quite paranoid enough to do that yet, but yeah, I think the time is getting close.
You're getting there, yeah. I think my favorite Apple headline that I ever got away with was when I was working for ZDNet Australia back in 2003, and it was and it was OS 10 insecure. How do you like dem apples? And I tell you what, that got me in a lot of trouble with the fanboys.
Yeah.
But who's laughing now? Okay. Now, a few weeks ago, we spoke about Westpac putting out a statement attributing a massive outage in its online banking system and an ATM network. They attributed that to human error. But we've seen this this news item here, Westpac remaining vigilant for following recent DOS attacks. Was that outage actually a DOS, not a...
No. What happened was, this is what Westpac told us, is that that particular outage was due to human error. Apparently somebody pulled the wrong power cord and it all fell apart, which I remember sent us into hysterics really last time.
Yeah, whoops.
But then a little while later, it also went down again. Now, you know, Westpac customers are probably used to their site going down. I know whenever we write about this, we get a whole load of emails saying, oh God, it's down again, there's no big deal, you know, it happens all the time. But that time they actually said, you know, we got hit by a DOS attack. Yeah, and Westpac have never admitted to us anyway that, you know, they've been the victim of a DDoS attack. But this time they actually said so. And then it happened, you know, just a few weeks later, they published another warning on their site saying it's a hoax email and, you know, customers ought to look at the internet banking terms and conditions and whatever and, you know, make sure they don't fall for it. So it's good that now that, you know, they're going to continue putting out these things. But then whenever one of these emails comes out, I mean, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if it's followed by another attack. So yeah, I'm keeping my eyes out on that one for sure. It's the same thing, you know, in the betting and gambling industry there, where you got these racing sites and they all end up being threatened a week or two before a big race, and then saying, you know, 10 grand 20 grand or so before otherwise we're going to take your site down. And seeing as that's only their shop window, I mean, you know, sometimes they pay, sometimes they don't pay and get taken down.
Gambling sites, though, that, you know, you're talking about ill-gotten gains. It's fair game, I reckon. The gangsters versus the gambling merchants. It's a nice little showdown. All right, Muneer, thank you very much for your time this week, and congratulations on your promotion.
Cheers, mate.
Thanks again.
Bye-bye.
That was Muneer Katadia from ZDNet Australia. We'll be back right after this.
Checkpoint is the worldwide leader in securing the internet. Our focus is purely on IT security. Pure Security ensures customers' protection through unified, reliable, and extensible solutions. Learn more about the technology that secures 128 of Australia's top 200 companies at checkpoint.com.
It's been a while since we've had a noteworthy internet virus trash systems across the globe, but it seems that one has cropped up. We've got Rob Lowe from Ausert on the line from Brisbane. Rob, what's so interesting about the so-called storm worm or virus?
Yeah, Patrick, we've seen this week quite a few, or over the recent couple of weeks actually, we've seen quite a few instances of what's often commonly called the storm worm. However, it's not doesn't fit the typical definition of a worm because it's not self-propagating. You still need to click on the link or visit the website to get infected. What we've seen is, again, the mechanism or the hooks that the attackers are using to entice you to install this virus or malware is not anything new. It's still our old favourites of the eCard and install these patches to update your computer. But it's been around since January 2007, and it's had it's gone through a whole lot of iterations of hooks or social engineering tactics to try and get people to click on the link. And we've actually seen it now appear and evolve over that time. And now it's using what appears to be peer-to-peer type communication mechanisms. So that for us is quite noteworthy and quite interesting. And
how do you mean peer-to-peer? I mean, if this is a bit of malware served up through a web browser or via email, what do you mean by peer-to-peer?
Okay, you receive an email that says, click on this link to get your e-card or update your patches because there's a recent virus going around. And once you click on that link, you can either have the option, and we've seen both, it tries to exploit both vulnerabilities and both give you a direct download. So there's been two sort of types of this type of Trojan, and we've seen the attackers actually switch between the two.
Okay.
Once that happens, is you're going to this one host, and it's all self-contained there. So this link is just a direct IP address to this other web server. And it seems that this web server is actually as part of a botnet as well. So there's multiple sites serving up this same Trojan. What we're not sure of is exactly the nature. Is this botnet part of the existing compromised sites, or are they using a separate botnet for that? So are they using, is it on the same Storm network, if you like, or are they using a separate botnet to serve up their host? Either way, it's quite nasty, because it provides them a lot of different URLs, so there's no one site that we can take down. That's not all. There's more.
But wait, there's more.
Exactly. Because once you download and get finally infected with the payload, it then goes and communicates via UDP, via a whole lot of other sites. So it looks and tries to contact these other sites. Now, we're not exactly sure what is traveling on this communication mechanism, but our guess is that it's probably going to be commands from issued via the botnet or downloading additional components.
So I guess someone really is setting up a gigantic botnet here.
Yes, exactly. And Stormworm is quite, or this Storm virus is quite nice because it's really componentized. So the first one is just a downloader, and then, you know, if you want to do DDoS or if you want to send spam, you can actually just seed that out, and all your clients will pick that up and they'll be ready to go to start doing that. So really, it's up to you then what you want to install on those systems.
Now, I understand at this stage that it's undetectable. Is that right?
The first downloader is quite widely detected, but as far as we can see, the second stage, or really the main part or the main guts of the Trojan, is not very well detected by any virus at the minute, but we're working with antivirus to get that out, those samples out, and hopefully they'll get definitions in to quickly detect those.
Geez, with something this sophisticated, you wonder how long it's going to be before the actual software industry, the legitimate software industry, starts learning from malware writers. This stuff sounds very sophisticated.
It is. We're not sure of the peer-to-peer protocol that's being used. There's a few different analysis out there that suggests it's one type or another, but this is actually existing peer-to-peer. We're not sure exactly about what peer-to-peer mechanism it's using. There is conjecture about exactly the protocol, but that's by the by. But it is using, apparently, or from the analysis we've read, it's using existing peer-to-peer protocols. For example, I've heard someone says that it actually uses Overnet, but we haven't verified that.
Okay, well, Rob, definitely one to keep an eye on. Thanks a lot for your time.
Yep, no worries, Patrick.
Rob Lowe from Ossert there. Next up, it's time to hear from Paul Craig from securityassessment.com. He uncovered some fairly significant flaws in Microsoft's .NET framework last October, and I interviewed him for a piece that ran in today's Sydney Morning Herald and Age newspapers here in Australia. Sadly, the audio on this call was quite terrible. I had to run some filters, which boosted the quality of his voice, but did some awful things to the recording of my end of the conversation. Apologies for that. But I guess we can blame the poor call quality on the crappy lines into New Zealand. Craig is based in Auckland. I started off by asking Paul Craig to explain the bug he found.
The bug is essentially that .NET is vulnerable to a class of attack that most researchers, or everyone, didn't think .NET was vulnerable to. So the class of attack is being able to terminate a string arbitrarily, and there are logic flaws within .NET itself, like the language interpreter, that under certain circumstances you can use a string termination character, like a null byte, to view the contents of other files in the web server, to view the contents of like web.config and get the database credentials or the encryption keys. Or
will this vulnerability be easily eradicated through a patch, or is it something a little bit beyond that?
The immediate instances of the vulnerability that I found were fixed by the patch.
Okay.
But the class of attack still exists in .NET. So other parts of the framework could still be vulnerable. So it might still have to fix the things that I found, but who's to say that there are more types of this vulnerability in the CLR?
So do you think it's you might have actually opened up a bit of a can of worms with this one?
Yeah, it's finding a new class of attack. It's a new way of attacking .NET applications. It wasn't so much just, here's one vulnerability. It's saying .NET is vulnerable to this type of attack. Here are some vulnerabilities caused by this, but I mean, the framework is very large, so There could be many more instances of it.
And how did you actually find this this new attack class?
Just through penetration testing. I was working for someone auditing a .NET application, and I found that it was possible to do this. I then researched it and spent some more time working with it.
Now, is this a case where you've said that it's actually, I suppose, the .NET framework itself is sort of flawed in some ways. Is it possible that some of these patches could break .NET applications?
I doubt that personally. Microsoft go through quite a large QA process, especially when they apply a patch to a language such as this. So, I mean, this patch has been coming for almost a year, and I think Microsoft actually do a pretty good job of testing their patches.
So you first notified them of this a year ago?
About 10 months.
Wow, that's kind of a long time. I mean, are you satisfied with the response?
I've had other bugs with other vendors that have taken a year, longer than a year, 15 months.
Well, I suppose that's sort of an indication of how complicated and intricate this particular problem is, isn't it?
Exactly. I would be more shocked if they pushed out a patch in a week.
Yeah, okay. So do it right or don't do it at all.
It almost made last patch Tuesday, but they had some additional problems and it had to get retested.
Well, let's get into a general discussion now, I suppose, about vulnerability response, because it seems that you're happy with the way Microsoft handled this particular problem.
Usually when I email a vendor and I say, look, I found a bug in the software product, you know, the first person I email, they say, you know, it's not my job, not my responsibility. I get forwarded on to someone else. Usually they come back and say, you know, we don't believe you, go away. So you almost have to be persistent to find someone to tell them, hey, look, I've got this security bug, I've got a problem. When you email the Microsoft security response team, you get a reply within a couple of days, and they say, great, here's like an ID for your bug. Here's the person you'll be working with. This is what we're going to do with it. It's actually a very good way of dealing with bugs. I think they're quite proficient.
Well, I suppose it's great that you're applauding Microsoft, but do you also have a shame file?
I don't want to say names. But
you don't want to name names? I mean, no. Two of the big ones that come up are Oracle and Apple. I don't know if you've had any dealings with them, or is that just something...
I've heard of nightmare dealings with Oracle and Apple and other large companies.
Mm-hmm. Do you generally find it's the smaller mobs that are... Do you find the smaller mobs better or worse when dealing with this stuff?
I really depends. It depends on the company's aware of security and if they take it seriously. Do they have someone sitting there checking emails? Do they have a security at email address? Things like that.
Okay, so I suppose the headline with this .NET thing is it's an information disclosure vulnerability, but it could disclose some very serious stuff. It's not a code execution thing, is it?
No, well, it's a type of a vulnerability that can be used to create different situations and different circumstances. So you could possibly use this as a code execution if you could find a vulnerability to accompany it.
Okay.
Understand.
Yes, I get it. It's sort of like a vector for exploitation.
Exactly.
The people who should be most worried about this are people running .NET sort of web applications, is that right?
People that were unpatched.
How urgently would you say people should get on top of this?
The patch actually fixed four problems, and some of the other problems were code execution. So they should install the patch.
Yeah, and you'd say there's been some decent regression testing over the last 12 months.
Yeah, I would say so.
Paul Craig, thank you very much.
Hey, no worries.
That was securityassessment.com's Paul Craig. Now, next up, it would normally be time for our sponsor interview. Verizon Business Security Solutions sponsors this podcast. It simply wouldn't be possible without the company's continued and considerable support. So each week, we like to have one of their consultants on the podcast for a chat. Alas, this week, due to circumstances beyond our control, the copy of the interview I recorded was corrupted. So, sadly, that brings us to the close of another edition of Risky Business. Thanks to all our guests, and thank you for listening. Bye-bye.